think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 158 of Low Limit Football on this 10th of April, 2017. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and very, very excited for the week in football that we have coming up. First off, I do want to apologize tonight for any technical difficulties. We are on location this evening, and the internet connection is a little spotty, but we're going to do our best to give you the best show that we can. We did have a great weekend in Europe, though, where we saw derbies in Spain and Germany that totally did not disappoint, with a goal fest in Germany between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. In Italy, Andrea Belotti became the first player in the city to score 24 goals in a single season before his 24th birthday since Andrei Shevchenko in the 99-2000 season. So that kid is certainly on fire. The French race is tightening up both at the top and bottom of the tables, with a Balotelli brace on the weekend keeping Nice's nose in the mix with Monaco and PSG. And we're going to prepare for the quarterfinals of the Champions League tonight. Are the top teams prepared? We are going to discuss that and more with BN Sports' Jonathan Johnson. So very, very excited about tonight's show. I know we've got a great one planned for you. And I'm going to just hurry up and get my co-host in here right now, Mr. Rojas. What's going on tonight, man?
Doing well, Joe. Ready for another week of exciting soccer to talk about after an exciting weekend. And yeah, it's just really excited to have a guest on Jonathan Johnson again. He's always been a great guest for us in the show history, so we're glad to have him back.
I picked the right weekend to go on vacation, didn't I? So now I can hang out. So yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. You know, tomorrow I'm all set. I packed my Bonucci jersey. I'm ready to watch the game. I did pack a Messi jersey too, but we're not going to talk about that right now. Yeah, man, it's such a great way to kick off the week tomorrow with the Juventus-Barca match. We're gonna run into Wednesday with Real Madrid-Bayern that everybody's looking forward to. And even, you know, one thing that we're going to spend maybe 7 seconds on tonight, you've got the Europa quarterfinals for the Europa League as well on Thursday. So we've got tons and tons and tons of soccer to come up. We've got some good matches on the weekend as well. One of the big matches of the month is going to be on the weekend as well. So we're going to talk about that for a few minutes. I'm just excited. One thing I do want to mention, you know, Rob, I do want to mention quickly, we had started our list of articles with our confidence picks. We did get the goalie one posted, the defense posted, and the midfield posted. My plan was to get the strikers and managers and then a final article done before the matches tomorrow. And because the internet connection has been so spotty up here that I'm not able to get in and do it. So, Rob, if you don't mind me spending 2 minutes on that, just giving the results of our voting and our comparisons for our top eight, you know, I just want to just kind of spill that in real quick before I even get to the trivia question. Is that all right?
Go ahead.
All right, let's do it. So with the goalie defense and midfields, go to our website, lowlimitfootball.com, and take a look at those articles. Obviously, we always welcome comments. You can tweet them at us. You can put them on our Facebook page and love to see them. The striker listings, in terms of our confidence and of basically who we think can get the job done, right, Rob? I mean, that's kind of the approach of our lists here. Who we have the most confidence in. So the striker list would be Leicester City at 8, Atletico at 7, Monaco at 6, which is kind of, I think, for you and I, was a close one because of, you know, what Griezmann can do for you versus, you know, the resurgence of Radamel Falcao. Obviously, Kylian Mbappe is another thing as well. Juve at number 5 for us. I think Higuain is always dangerous. People say he disappears in some of the big games, but he did score a couple of goals in that Copa the Coppa Italia semifinal against Napoli, so you know he doesn't exactly completely shy away. Dortmund at 4 on strict on sheer firepower, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, you know, and the kids that are supporting him in Dembele and Pulisic are, you know, are deadly. Bayern Munich at 3, we've got Robert Lewandowski, kind of the same story there, right, with a little more experience with Robin and Frank Ribery, who scored on the weekend as well. And number 2, you and I had Real Madrid, the BBC, you know, oh my goodness, Benzema, Bale, and Cristiano Ronaldo. Definitely formidable, not as formidable as number 1, Barcelona, with the MSN, Messi, Neymar, Suarez. You know, even we talked about before the show, Sam Tye's list came out where he's, right now he thinks Neymar's in the lead for the Ballon d'Or. And number 2 was Messi, so think about that. Two guys that play on the same line at the striker position, and they're both 1 and 2 for the Ballon d'Or right now, in someone's opinion. It's firepower beyond belief. So that was our striker list. Our manager list, we had, you know, in terms of who we felt most confident in managers, and we'll keep this one quick. Shakespeare at 8, Jardim at 7, Tuchel at 6, Simeone at 5, Enrique at 4, Allegri at 3, Zidane at 2, Ancelotti at 1. I think we should also mention that there was a tie between Allegri and Zidane. We gave the nod to Zidane because he's won the Champions League. He's the defending champion. Ancelotti's obviously done this many times, you know, and we know the greatness of Carlo Ancelotti. So in terms of a guy that can guide a team through the rough waters and to the championship, I think he's the one. The last thing was total ranking. So from here, we pick who we feel most confident in saying that they will win the Champions League title based on all the other pieces that we've put in there. Right, Rob? You know, so yeah. So number 8, Leicester City, 7, Monaco, Dortmund, 6, Atletico, 5, Real Madrid, 4, Juventus, 3, Barcelona, 2, and Bayern Munich. Rob, you and I, based on everything we analyze, we are most confident with Bayern Munich winning the Champions League this year. Bayern, of our 5 categories, was number 1 in 3 of them. They were number 1 at goalie, which there was a tie between them and Juventus. There was number 1 in the midfield and number 1 at manager. Juventus was number 1 in defense, and Barcelona was number 1 at striker over analysis. So, again, you know, we wanted to give you the final pieces before tomorrow. We're not saying that we individually are picking Bayern to win the Champions League, but by analysis, that's kind of where we're at. So anything you want to add to that, Rob, before we move on to the trivia question?
No. I think that everything – yeah, nothing at all.
Yeah, I agree. You know, so let's give me 1 second here. I'm just messaging someone a quick message. Let's see. All right. So now let's hit the trivia question. I think I got a great one for you tonight, Rob.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and let me get my wording for it here quickly. I've got it written down here somewhere how I wanted to word it. I'm not entirely prepared. So, my trivia question is this. N'Golo Kanté, we all know who he is, right? He's on the verge of becoming the 5th player ever to win back-to-back titles with 2 different teams. Okay? So it's only been done by 4 other players so far. I will give you the hint that it was done once in the Premier League, twice in the Serie A, and once in La Liga. 4 different players have won their league title with 2 different teams back-to-back years. Okay? So can you name the other 4?
Repeat that question just one more time, just so I can understand
okay.
it.
So N'Golo Kanté is on the verge of becoming the 5th player to ever win back-to-back titles with 2 different teams. Okay?
Yes.
So last year he won it with Leicester City. This year he's on the verge of winning it with Chelsea. Can you name the other 4 teams?
4 teams or 4 players?
I'm sorry, 4 players.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So, I got one. One's an easy one.
All right. So you got one. Would you? And I gave you the hint that there are there's one in Spain, two in Italy, and one in England. All right.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Good. Awesome. I don't know. I don't know if it'll be as good next week, but we'll, I'm going to put it on you next week to do it. So let's now let's talk about our opening thoughts topic of the night, which is a great one. I think it's going to be a good conversation, but I do want to keep it short because I know with Jonathan he's only got about 15-20 minutes for us, so I want to keep it a little short and sweet so that we can get everything we want to get in with Jonathan. So, right. Opening thoughts topic today. Press conference was held. U.S., Mexico, and Canada are launching an unprecedented World Cup bid from three different countries for the 2026 World Cup. Now, there are a ton of moving pieces in this. This obviously happened this afternoon, although it was no real secret, but the actual bid came out, or the actual structure of the bid came out today. There are 80 matches. There are going to be 60 of them played in the United States, 10 in Mexico, 10 in Canada. There's lots of thoughts as to why we have a three-country bid. We've seen a two-country bid before with Korea, Japan in 2002, but we've never seen a three-country bid before. And there are many, many questions, many, many things to discuss about it. So, Rob, I want to give it to you first for your opening thoughts on what, you know, the bid, everything. Just give it all to me.
Yeah, I mean, simply put, the presidents of the United States Soccer Federation, Canada, and Mexico, as you mentioned, held a press conference today at the World Trade Center to announce that they're formally going to set a bid for the 2026 World Cup in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Now, as I was watching the press conference as well, it wasn't too much to say, but I'll just get the gist of it. You know, the proposal was made is going to be made to FIFA, 60 games in the United States, 10 in Mexico, 10 in Canada. They're also saying that the proposal is going to, that after the quarterfinals or starting the quarterfinals, all the matches will be played in the United States. So the games in the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the final will all be on American soil. And besides that, it's not much to say. I mean, it seems simple as well, but it also is just it's too far away to think about it going forward. It's 9 years away, and we don't even know what's going to happen here in 9 years between that proposal. It's obviously the undisputed bid to win the World Cup, so I haven't seen any competitors go for it yet. Right. But I feel that this is a perfect opportunity for an expanded World Cup, the first expanded World Cup in, well, this one would be after some 30-odd years, to demonstrate at its full force. Now, there have been complaints about perhaps the there are pros and cons, of course. I think the pros are the infrastructure. It's there. And we've spoken about this at previous World Cups where they have to build numerous stadiums. Here in the United States, in Canada, and Mexico, they already have the stadium perfectly fine to seat these thousands of fans.
Sure.
The cons, on the other hand, will be travel distance, will be politics aside regarding what happens.
Right.
Fans trying to come into this country, especially if the majority of the games are going to be in the United States. It's really complicated, but it's also simple in a way. But I think it's a good idea. I think it'd be great to see a country that is obviously growing ever since the '94 World Cup, where they hosted, which was a huge success. So it's it'd be nice to see now the whole continent be a part of them, be a part of a new World Cup in a way. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were controversy about co-hosting back in 2002 when it was in the Far East in Japan and Korea, how that affected travel and obviously time-wise for everyone here. But this one is going to be different. I think it's a good idea. Yeah. But we're just going to have to wait and see, because in the end, FIFA has the final decision of where to put the games in and put their matches in and everything else.
You know, for me, the couple of things that I'm reading, one,
why did the United States jump into bid with Mexico and Canada, you know, going for this? And the reason, I mean, the reason is pretty obvious. I think if the U.S. went on this alone and Mexico jumped in and said, you know what, we're going to put in our bid and tried to get it as well. Mexico is certainly capable of hosting a World Cup. Now, a cup of that magnitude of 48 teams we'll talk about in a second. I don't know that they could handle that big of an event because that is an enormous, enormous event. Now, can the United States handle it? I think this country can. I think, you know, even Rob, you and I live in the Northeast. There are three stadiums within 2 hours of you and I, okay, yep, that can host.
Maybe more actually.
I'm sure there's more. But, I mean, three that, you know, even when we look at it this year, you know, with the International Champions Cup, we have Roma Juventus that's going to be played in Gillette Stadium in Boston. We have Juve Barca that's going to be played in MetLife. And they just announced this week the U.S. is going to play a friendly against Ghana as a prep game for their Gold Cup. And that's going to be at Rensselaer Field in East Hartford, Connecticut, you know, the site of Landon Donovan's last U.S. men's national team game. Right. So there is plenty of stadium just in the Northeast corridor, you know, and then when you expand that out, you expand it to Philadelphia, you expand it to Washington, you expand it to Baltimore. I've listed now five or six stadiums that are within six driving hours of each other that can easily host, you know, what, 10, 12 teams? I mean, oh, yeah, plenty. So this country has plenty of infrastructure, plenty of stadiums. Nothing needs to be built. So the U.S. could host this on its own. I think including Mexico and Canada in this bid are strictly to make it more appealing to FIFA to vote for it to happen here so that, you know, so that we could bring the World Cup back here. Now, I also think that if it went as a two separate bids, let's say the United States said, well, we're going to bid ourselves, and then Mexico said, we're going to bid ourselves, you could have potentially seen something where votes get eaten up by each other, and then we see a World Cup hosted back in, let's say, Africa, or we see a World Cup hosted back in South America like Brazil was 3 years ago. So I think with this bid and the way it's structured, with the amount of teams and stadiums that are already there and everything that's ready to go, this is almost a lock, and especially given the bitterness of the 2018 and the 2022 World Cup bids and the way the United States was screwed, for lack of a better term. You know, I think this was a way for the U.S. to say, not only are we going to bid on this World Cup, but we're going to get it. Okay, the politics part of it, I know a little bit has been made about Donald Trump, his travel ban, all that stuff, and thankfully I've seen plenty of reaction on Twitter today saying, guys, this is going to be anywhere between 2 and 6 years after a Donald Trump presidency. Okay.
Hopefully.
Well, it absolutely will be. I mean, it'll at minimum be 2 years past. Let's say Donald Trump gets in 8 years. He's out at 2022. You're there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So policies will change with the next president, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat in this country. So the travel part of it wouldn't be an issue. Okay. And thankfully there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about this. I think the two sticking points that we're going to see in this bid moving forward, and I don't know how these things got by to begin with. One, if you recall back to the 2015 Women's World Cup, they made a big deal about, you know, the women playing on artificial surfaces. And the women went to the point of where they sued FIFA, but things didn't change. They played on artificial surfaces. There's talk now that they're going to take whatever stadiums that they're going to use for this World Cup and change them over to grass, which for me puts a lot of egg on the equality face of both Canada, the Canadian Federation, and FIFA. It's a bad, bad situation to be placed into. Okay. And they're going to have to either eat crow and admit that they're not treating the women's game the same way they're treating the men's game, or they're going to make the men play on turf. And I think that the rest of the world will be in huge upheaval about that, especially if you see somebody get hurt. But I think there's a problem there. What you're seeing also from the Mexican media is that the Mexican media is pushing the Mexican Federation to pull out of this bid because they're only getting 10 games. Even Rob, I think even you tweeted tonight that you're like, you know, what the heck? How are we not playing the final in Azteca?
And logically, and I don't care if for anyone, I think it would be
it's the perfect timing. I mean, Mexico will be the first country, if they get this World Cup, to host three World Cups. On it would be perfectly logical to have the final at the Azteca.
Yeah, I
because of that.
I mean, think about some of the greatest footballing stadiums in the world. Azteca's on the list. You know, and to take that a step,
the biggest one in the continent, in this continent.
But to take it even a step
maybe
further,
maybe this region. Yep, go ahead.
A stadium where you sit there and you think about, okay, what are the greatest places? If I'm a soccer diehard, where do I want to play? Where would I play, like, as a dream stadium? Where would it be? You know, Old Trafford, right? Wembley, right? Maybe the San Siro,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. You know, the Nou Camp, you know, the Bernabeu. Think about these places, right?
Yep.
Does Red Bull Arena cross that path? Does that go on your mind? I mean, really? You know, do you want to play at Soldier Field? Is that your footballing dream? No, Azteca is. Azteca uh-huh. is. I don't care what nationality you are. Azteca is. You got to hold the final there. The problem is that this is a United States bid, and the payoff to win the bid was to give Mexico 10 games and to give Canada 10 games. That's it. That's it. Simple.
So, even I don't want to get any offense to Canada, but perhaps you probably spread it out a bit and do, what is it, 80 games?
It's 80
games.
Games,
right? So do, I don't know, do
40-20-20.
30, yeah.
40-20-20. You want to keep
40-20-20 or 35-25. I'm just doing bad math here. Yeah. Like 20, something like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but certainly give the other players more of a piece of the pie. Okay? But now what did you do? You really made the United States has made a situation, or the U.S. Soccer Federation has made a situation where it's pretty clear they're paying off Mexico and Canada not to bid on this World Cup so that they can win it. And the payoff is we'll give you 10 games each. Mexico's not going to be happy because they're only getting 10 games. Why should they be a part of this bid when they can host the whole thing? Canada's going to be happy they're getting the World Cup, but they're going to have to do it with a little egg on their face if they end up reversing course and putting grass in all these fields.
In the end, I mean, Canada does deserve it. I mean, they hosted a U-20, they hosted the women's one, they have all the benefit of the doubt to host the World Cup.
And I'm not disagreeing with that part. I just think that, you know, it puts them in a spot where now you've got to eat a little crow. You're either going to put grass on the field and eat crow, or you're going to put it on turf and every single football club in the world is going to lose their minds about playing Neymar on artificial surface. You know, with the risk of injury that comes along with it. So that's, you know, but for me as an American, and I think for you as an American, I think you and I are both beaming happy, right?
Yes.
Because this World Cup, you know, barring something absolutely insane, is coming to the United States in 2026. And all we can do, you and I, is hope to be alive to go and attend it.
Right.
You know, and that's plain and simple. And,
exactly.
You know, so that's going to be the best part. And for me, I'd actually love to be able even to go to Mexico to see a game, go to Canada to see a game, come back to the U.S. and see a game and do a little traveling. Yeah. So that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be a wonderful road trip to do.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, is there one stadium that you would definitely prefer?
Oh, look, I went to five different ones last year and it gave me, you can't go with it. You can't disagree and not discount home like MetLife Stadium. You know, that's a place where that's like right near your hearts. Gillette as well, Philly. So yeah, it depends. But if I had to choose one, yeah, MetLife definitely. If they are gonna play the final on American soil, they're gonna have to do it there. If not, the Rose Bowl, like in '94.
So let's jump away from our opening thoughts, because I know we're limited on our time with Jonathan. I want to bring him into the conversation and definitely chit chat with him. So even this particular topic, which I think is a great one, I think we should get his two cents in on it for sure before we if we do anything else. I'm just waiting for him to connect here at this point, which, like I said, that. Our internet tonight is a little sketchy, so you'll just unfortunately have to bear with us, I think, right? That'll just be what it is tonight. So let's see if he'll connect here. Oh, for some reason that didn't connect. So let's try him one more time. and see if we can get him connected here with us. I sounds like we do have him. So, Jonathan, I want to make sure you're there. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us. Again, ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Johnson from BN Sports. And we're so happy to have you back. Rob and I were just talking about the joint World Cup bid that came out today, the unprecedented three-nation World Cup bid by the United States, Mexico, and Canada. What are your thoughts on that particular occasion? What are your thoughts on a three-country World Cup?
I mean, I think anything more than one country really makes it very difficult for supporters to commit to going. Obviously there are people who will follow their country all across the globe, and they will spend massive amounts of money to do that. But, you know, across three countries, especially three countries as big as the United States, Mexico and Canada, you know, that's going to be costing people so much more money than usual. It's going to make it very difficult for a lot of countries to have really dedicated followings for every match.
I agree. Even for myself and Rob, being in the United States, being in one of those countries, you know, we like the idea of being able to travel to Mexico and to Canada to possibly see matches, but it's going to be an expensive proposition, to say the least. So,
I think, you know, for one match, it's a great adventure, but there are people who are going to want to commit to following their team for the whole tournament. Particularly people from Europe, you know, the followings of a lot of the major footballing powerhouses here in this continent, is huge, and it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people to be able to commit to that.
Surely, absolutely. Let's. I want to switch our focus back to the task at hand, and that's the Champions League quarterfinals that kicks off tomorrow. I do want to start off talking about Monaco Dortmund. I think many, many people out there look at this matchup and question where the defense is going to be, because these two teams are such prolific scorers that I think people are genuinely excited to see how many goals can be scored in a particular footballing match, especially the quarterfinals of the Champions League. But looking at this match, Dortmund is really riddled with injuries in this one. I was looking at the list of players that are out and players that actually will be questionable for tomorrow. This match is tomorrow. Players like Gonzalo Castro, Mario Götze, you know, Andre Schürrle are out, ruled out already. Julian Weigl, Marco Reus, and Shinji Kagawa are questionable for this. I'm not sure if they've been ruled out yet or not. But Monaco comes in rather healthy. They're going to be missing a couple of players, but for the most part, I think Radamel Falcao has overcome his groin injury and should be set to play tomorrow. When you look at this matchup, especially given the injuries that Dortmund has on their side, who do you look to on Monaco's side to possibly exploit the holes that could be presented in the Dortmund offense or the Dortmund team?
Well, I mean, I think you've just got to look at the Monaco attack. You know, there's so much talent there already. You've got Kylian Mbappe, obviously, who needs no introduction. You've got Falcao as well, who should take his place in the starting 11 alongside Mbappe. And then either side of those two, you've got Lemar and you've got Bernardo Silva. So, you know, any of those four guys really can pose a threat at any point during the match. I think that the key threat will be somebody like Mbappe, because if Monaco get him into the game with his pace, he can really do some damage there, especially up against what's going to be a makeshift Dortmund side in places. And it's a real shame, for Dortmund to be battling so many absences coming into this. I mean, Monaco are missing somebody like Tiemoue Bakayoko, who is an extremely influential player, but that's just one player. And Leonardo Jardim does have a bit of depth to play with. He doesn't have too much depth. He was talking in his pre-match press conference about how there are going to be some pretty tired legs going out there at Westfalenstadion tomorrow. But I think Monaco are definitely in a better position than Dortmund coming into this one. And I think that what Monaco need to do is try to concentrate on the areas of the pitch where Dortmund are going to be weakest, and the players are perhaps having to fill in a role that's not usually their own.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't hear that Bakayoko was going to be. Is he going to be missing tomorrow? Is he ruled out?
Yeah, he's suspended. Booked in the second leg against City and then scored the winning goal.
I didn't see that. I was looking through that notes and I thought they were coming in pretty healthy. Looking back at that Monaco midfield, it is quite young. I mean, Bernardo Silva is 22. Fabinho is the elder statesman at 23 years old. you know, just looking forward both from a league standpoint and the Champions League moving forward into the future, how likely is this midfield able to stay together with so much young talent? Can Monaco hold on to them?
I think it's going to be very difficult for Monaco to hold on to all of their players that they have in the squad this season over the summer. I think that there will be departures. It's just a question of whether the right offers come in for the right players first, or whether it's some of the, you know, the younger players who are attracting the big bids. Because I think in an ideal world for Monaco, they're going to be looking to move on the likes of Falcao and Moutinho this summer. I think they'd rather let them go than the younger players in that team, because like you said, you know, I think they're going to want to keep the nucleus of this very talented young starting 11 together for at least another season or so. But, you know, you're going to have big bids coming in for the likes of Mbappe, Bernardo Silva as well. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think Bernardo Silva, Benjamin Mendy and Mbappe are the, you know, the three most likely to leave in terms of, you know, bids coming in that Monaco might find acceptable, because you just got to look at the way that football works these days, particularly in the transfer market, and when somebody is flavour of the week, as Mbappe is right now, you know, they're going to be big clubs who are prepared to stump up massive amounts of cash to try and sign him.
Well, I for one am hoping that they don't break up this core, because they've been so much fun to watch this year.
I think if the, you know, if the core of this squad does get broken up, it's not going to be out of choice from Monaco. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, we have to remember that this Monaco project is built on buying in, you know, good young talent, adding value to it, and then selling it on for a big fee. There will always have to be sacrifices made every summer. That's just the nature of the project. It's just a question of which bids come in first for which players, and whether Monaco find them acceptable or not.
Right, right. I want to change the focus now to one of the other matchups that we're going to see this week, and that is the Atleti-Leicester matchup. Kind of a similar viewpoint, but certainly not nearly as offensive, two offensive sides as we're going to see in the Dortmund-Monaco match. But Atleti-Leicester has its share of injuries as well leading into this one, especially on the Atleti side. I know that Wes Morgan is ruled out of this one for Leicester City, but Atletico come in pretty banged up. Nico Gaitán, Kevin Gamero, all carrying in injuries moving through on this one. Same kind of situation. Does Leicester, I mean, we've all pretty much ruled Leicester as the eighth team out of eight in this particular competition left. But does Leicester have an opportunity here with the knocks that Atleti is currently under? Do they have an opportunity to possibly steal some points, maybe score a goal at Madrid and then come home and then maybe take their chances next week?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Leicester really have to play to their strengths and try and be as physical as possible, because this is an Atleti side, like you said, that's dipping into a lot of their strength and depth right now. And, you know, they're getting tested and the players are going to be tired. And, you know, I think it's a good opportunity for Leicester. But I have to admit, I think that Atleti are going to be a much tougher proposition for Leicester than Sevilla were. I was surprised how limp Sevilla were really in the end against the Foxes, and I think that this is probably going to be the end of the road for Leicester. I don't necessarily think that, you know, Atleti will win resoundingly over the two legs, but I think that they'll be comfortable enough, even though they're coming into this with a couple of injury concerns.
I completely agree, and you know, not to poo-poo Leicester's season here in the Champions League, because, you know, they're kind of pulling the same Cinderella thing they pulled a year ago, where, you know, no one expected them to win the Premier League. No one expected them to escape the group stages of the Champions League. No one expected them to even defeat Sevilla moving forward. And here we are in the quarterfinals, and there they are still there. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for Atleti as well, that they have to make sure that in their minds they don't look at this Leicester side and think, well, we should beat them, really. You know, because if they allow themselves to slip into a bit of complacency, you know, and they're not at full strength already, as we've discussed, you know, that's when Leicester can really spring that surprise.
Certainly. I'm going to turn you over to Rob. I know he has the marquee matchups on his mind for this week, and then I want to come back and ask another one or two legal and questions before we let you go. So, Rob, go ahead and take it away.
Yes, hi, Jonathan. Before I do ask the Champions League question, I want to stick back to Liga and talk about two teams so far that have been, I guess, on a hot and cold situation. Firstly, it's Monaco, you know, top of the Liga right now, 74 points. Do you feel like this is a good thing that we see some indifference now in Ligue 1 compared to the four successive years that PSG have won Ligue 1? What do you think is the secret of this Monaco side doing so well? And besides Monaco as well, is a team that has impressed so far was Nice. So what are your thoughts on their success so far this season?
I think that Monaco's success definitely is built on the fact that Jardim now has more than two very good strikers to be able to put the ball in the back of the net. And that's something that he's never really had in his other seasons in charge of the team so far. You know, to have a reinvigorated Radamel Falcao, to have a sensation like Kylian Mbappe, and then also to have somebody as experienced as Valère Germain to be, you know, there to finish off the moves and you know, try and find the back of that in those difficult situations. That's something that he's never had before, and I think that's made a huge difference. And I also think that, you know, it's just a question of maturity for some of these players. You know, they're really coming into their own now. Jardim's, you know, come up with a few tactical innovations of his own. I think the move of Fabinho from right back to defensive midfield was inspired. You know, that's really added something new to this team, especially when you bear in mind that it allows, you know, Sidibe to bomb forward from right back. And then you've got Mendy at left back as well. That's, you know, two very, very good fullbacks at a European level. And I think the reason why the title race has been blown so wide open this season is because Monaco are insatiable in front of goal, but also because, you know, it's a time of change for PSG. You know, they're not as dominant as they were before for a number of reasons. You know, not only Unai Emery taking over, not only the loss of Zlatan Ibrahimovic and you know, a sort of change within the chemistry of the team, but, you know, also the fact that it's something that's affected so many of the big clubs in Europe this season, that they're coming off the back of a grueling campaign and then an international tournament. They didn't have too long for their holidays, and then they get straight back into another season. So I think it's natural that a lot of big European clubs, not only PSG, you know, have struggled at times during this term. But, you know, I think Monaco's key to success is Jardim knowing the league very, very well. You know, having come up with the right tactics to be able to win and win games convincingly in Le Championnat. And with Nice, you know, it's similar to Monaco. They've both found success with very vibrant squads. Okay, Nice have gone through a bit of patchy form of late, but they still find themselves just 4 points off of Monaco, one behind PSG, even though both of those two sides have a game in hand over Nice. And I think that, you know, the only thing that Nice don't really have going for them in the same way as Monaco is that this is Lucien Favre's first season in France. So, you know, he's still getting used to the league. He's adapted very, very well. And he's, you know, he's already enjoyed a dream debut campaign at Allianz Riviera. And I just think that if Nice can add a bit more strength in depth and get to a similar level as Monaco, you know, Monaco don't boast the same strength in depth that PSG do. You know, but nobody is going to in France. And if Nice can just get close to Monaco, you know, I think that they'll be in a position to do what Monaco have done this season. Next campaign, it's just a question of how they'll be able to balance domestic and European commitments. But it's, you know, both the great thing about this Monaco success story and this Nice success story is that both have been based on fantastic young talent, predominantly domestic talent as well, and that's, you know, something that Ligue 1 can really be proud of.
Do you think that this championship, this league is over for Monaco, or do you think that PSG and Nice can find a way to go past them?
Well, I think the further Monaco go in the Champions League, the tougher it's going to be for them to you know, keep fighting on all fronts, and that means that Ligue 1, the Coupe de France, are at risk. You know, we've seen Monaco play extremely well in Europe and domestically at times this season, but we've also seen them absolutely opened up a couple of weeks ago by PSG in the Coupe de la Ligue final. They've got to go to Paris to play PSG in the Coupe de France semi-final. So there's, you know, there are challenges ahead for this Monaco side. There's going to be a week coming up very soon where I think they face Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League, they face Lyon in Ligue 1, and they face PSG in the Coupe de France in the space of 7 days. That is going to be very, very tough for Monaco You know, even though they do have that bit of squad depth, it's not, you know, the depth isn't sufficient enough to cope with that sort of that sort of demand in the calendar. So I think that there is still going to be an opportunity for PSG and perhaps Nice to snatch this away from Monaco. But as we've seen with PSG a couple of times this season, when they have been presented the opportunity and Monaco have slipped up, which, you know, has not been often, they failed to take it. So PSG really cannot afford to not take it if another opportunity presents itself, because they won't be getting more than one.
Definitely. It's going to be an interesting next few days for Monaco, looking forward into the various competitions. Just going on to Monaco, obviously we just mentioned Kylian Mbappe, you know, the sensational 18-year-old who has been attracting the interest of the entire big clubs in the in all of Europe, like Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG, as you said, Arsenal, among others. Do you think that it would be wise for him to stay at Monaco for another season, or do you feel that he should leave because of what he's been able to achieve at Monaco?
I think he'd be wise to stay for at least another season. I mean, I would say that I agree with somebody like Robert Pires, where he says that he should stay for two. You know, I think that in an ideal world, that would be the case. But I don't think that that's how it's going to happen. So I think the best that Monaco can hope for is that he stays for one more season. I think that that would be the best decision for him, because at the moment, Mbappe, you know, he is established in this starting 11 now, but he hasn't been an established starter for the whole season. And I think he really needs that full campaign under his belt before he makes a move to one of Europe's biggest clubs. But like I said earlier on about the Monaco project, it's all a question of whether the right offer comes along at the right time for the right player. And I think that if you had to put your money on one player being the target of many European clubs' attentions this summer, it's going to be Mbappe. So I think that, you know, keeping him this summer is going to be a real challenge for Monaco. So I hope that he stays for an extra season, but I don't think that it's guaranteed just yet.
Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here on out. Now I'm going to switch over to the Champions League and talk about these two big matches, as Joe's mentioned. First, we have Juventus-Barcelona happening tomorrow. Just a few facts before I ask my question. Juventus have never lost to Barcelona in Turin. They're on a 21-match unbeaten home run in UEFA competition. They'll be without Busquets. So do you feel that Juventus have an advantage here against this this talented Barcelona side who defied all odds and reversed that PSG that lead? Or what?
Yeah, they got a massive helping hand from PSG in writing that page of history, I have to say. I wasn't particularly impressed by Barcelona from what I've seen of them in the Champions League this season, and I haven't been blown away by what I've seen from them domestically either. So yeah, I think it's a very good opportunity for Juventus, and I think that they're has never really been a better time to, you know, to take on Barcelona. I mean, you just look at what happened over the weekend. They had the opportunity given to them by the draw between Real and Atleti, to try and make up some of the ground at the top of the table, and they failed to do that, and ended up losing to Malaga, and, you know, a bit of petulance as well from one of their star men, Neymar. And it's, I don't think that, despite the fact that, you know, they did achieve the impossible in coming back to beat PSG, I think it was more down to PSG beating PSG than Barcelona beating PSG. And I think that we'll see a surprisingly average Barcelona side against Juventus over the two legs.
It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, Juventus beat this talented Barcelona side in this draw. So it's easily going to be very interesting to see.
I'd like to add that I'm hoping for exactly everything you said.
And just my last question, Jonathan, thank you again for coming on. We have this other big matchup between Bayern and Real Madrid. You know, this is a matchup of student against prodigy, two managers that you know well. In Zinedine Zidane, the Frenchman, and Carlo Ancelotti, who's had a history of coaching big clubs across Europe. So who do you think has the advantage here? Bear in mind, you know, Bayern won't have Manuel Neuer, Mats Hummels, and Thomas Müller on the side. But which one of these two have the advantage, even at full strength?
I'd say probably Ancelotti, because, you know, like you said, he's got the experience, but not only has he got the experience, he also has the knowledge of a lot of these Real players, having coached Real, in recent history as well. So I think that you'd have to say that the advantage does have to go to Bayern and Ancelotti ahead of this game. But obviously Real being Real, you can't rule them out. Some fantastic players there, players who, you know, individually can decide the biggest matches, you know, the likes of Ronaldo, the likes of Bale, you know, and that's perhaps where, you know, Real perhaps have a bit of an advantage in some of their star talent. Like if you stacked up the, you know, the top three stars of each side, I think you probably end up rating Real a little bit higher than Bayern, even though Bayern have some fantastic players as well. And I think that it seems like it's going to be a close encounter between the two. You know, but at the same time, you know, Zidane's worked alongside Ancelotti, so knows him very well, knows his methods. Whereas Ancelotti hasn't really worked alongside Zidane since Zidane's come into his own in terms of being a coach. So, you know, perhaps the Frenchman can spring a bit of a surprise there.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you again, Jonathan, for coming in. I'm going to pass it over to Joe.
Thanks, Rob. Jonathan, I know we're pressed for time, so I do want to ask one more question. And we'd asked this of Gabby Amato last week on the show. It was about the rumors of Alexander Lacazette possibly going to Atletico in the summer transfer window. Many say to partner up with Antoine Griezmann on the front line, but some have also suggested that the arrival of Lacazette could mean the departure of Griezmann. So just wanted your thoughts on where that potential transfer stands, and do you see a Lacazette-Griezmann pairing at Atletico, or do you see one coming in and one going out?
I definitely think that Lacazette to Atletico Madrid could happen. I'd be surprised if he stays at Lyon past this summer. I think the time has now arrived for him to move on, even though he would be comfortable enough staying for another season. You know, I'm not sure it will really benefit him now. It's the same for a couple of players there at Lyon as well. Corin Tantaliso, another one of those figures. I'm not sure, though, that I can see it being a Lacazette-Griezmann pairing. At Atleti, I think that if Lacazette moves to Madrid, it's going to be to replace Griezmann. You know, Lacazette's not going to be cheap. Lyon president Jean-Michel Aulas knows what he's doing when he's negotiating a transfer. And I think that if Atletico are to sign Lacazette, they're going to have to be spending big money. And the only way I can see them having that big money to splash is by selling Griezmann. So as exciting as it would be to see a Lacazette-Griezmann pairing, I don't think that that's what would happen if Lacazette does make the move to Madrid this summer.
I guess we'll just have to wait for the French national team next year in the World Cup to see that pairing actually come to fruition. So, Jonathan, thank you again for joining us tonight and coming on the show. We really always appreciate you coming on, and we'll always look forward to having you back again very soon.
It's a pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on, and speak to you soon, hopefully.
Sounds fantastic. Have a good night.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And Jonathan Johnson from BeIN Sports. Always enjoy his you know, his presence on the show. You know, interesting to see the Monaco talk, especially, you know, it's you really wish that the world football market would allow for teams like Monaco, and especially such a young midfield, would allow teams like that to stay together and flourish, you know, a little bit. But unfortunately, like he said, the project at Monaco is not to do that. The project there is to, you know, get them in young, develop them, sell them at a high price, and use that money to, you know, either put in their pockets or move on to the next, you know, child prodigy project. So,
and it's not like Monaco aren't a team with less money as well. You have to think about it. Who's the owner of Monaco?
Oh, of course.
And where they're from.
Right. No, exactly. And it's they're not hurting, you know, they're not hurting for cash, but it's an unfortunate truth in football these days. So let's jump into our league coverage quick. I know we're going to rip through that quick. And again, want to mention to everybody, I do apologize. One of the things that we normally do is give you what our predictions were from last week. But since I was traveling, I didn't have those written down with me. So I don't know what the scores were that we predicted last week. Go and listen to show 157 and you'll know what we were talking about. And then you can come back and listen to 158 and see how we did. So, Rob, I'm going to throw it over to you for La Liga, please.
Absolutely. And I think I predicted this as a draw as well. But our match of the week was the at Madrid derby. It was Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid.
I think you're right.
Yes, I picked a 2-2 draw. I just remember it, but it ended in a 1-1 draw. A goal from Pepe in the 52nd minute gave Los Blancos the lead, but in the 85th minute, Antoine Griezmann scored the equalizer to give all but 1 point to the Madrid sides. Having said that, the table is as stands. Real Madrid in first with 72. In second, Barcelona with their loss with 69 points. Atletico is in third with 62. In fourth, bear in mind with this that we might get some news on this. Mm-hmm. Sevilla, a Jorge Sampaoli-less Sevilla that we probably will get at the end of the season. Not confirmed yet, but it's all signs are him. That shows that he'll be going to the Argentine national team at season's end. Are currently fourth in the in a Champions League spot. Villarreal in fifth with 54. In sixth, Real Sociedad with 52. Running off the relegation zone, we have Gijón with 22, Granada with 20, and in last place, Osasuna with 17 points. Top goal scorers are Messi with 27, Suarez with 24, Cristiano Ronaldo with 19, Iago Aspas with 16, and Antoine Griezmann with his goal goes still with 15 goals this season. Our match of the week for next week is going to be it's going to be Real Madrid against Sociedad, Saturday at 2:45 p.m. A team that's always been a bogey team for Barcelona. They're separated by 17 points. Barcelona second and Real Sociedad in sixth in the final Europa League spot. Barcelona are trying their best to bounce back from that loss against Malaga that could be decided. Could be hurtful for their chances to win La Liga heading into El Clásico in a couple of weeks. But I think that coming out of this Juventus match, depending on what happens here on out, I think that Barcelona should be able to win this one perfectly fine. I'm going to give a 2-0 victory for Barcelona in this one.
2-0. And this is one of those proverbial banana skins, isn't it? You know,
right.
Sociedad squeezed in between two matches against Juventus. It's, you know, even though they get to come home for the second match in this, but certainly going to be something to focus on. That's no doubt about it. Let's move on to Ligue 1. Where Ligue 1 last week, we had a relegation match between Dijon and Bastia. I honestly don't remember what I predicted on this one, but the final result was Bastia 2, Dijon 1. Elise Milou goal on the 29th minute, offset by Crivelli in the 17th, and Kauzak in the 58th minute for Bastia, leading to the 2-1 victory for them in this one. So we're going to take a quick look at the standings. And we see Monaco, as Jonathan alluded to earlier, Monaco on top with 74 points, PSG on 71 points, Nice with an extra game in their pocket on 70. Then we move quite a ways down to Lyon in fourth place at 54 points. But we do have a tight Europa race here, Rob. It was something I wanted to ask Jonathan about, but we didn't get a chance to. Lyon on 54 points, Bordeaux on 49, Marseille on 48, and Saint-Étienne on 45 points, all looking to try and get into those last Europa League spots. Saint-Étienne hasn't actually... The reason I include them in the mention is because they have a match at hand, as does Monaco and PSG at the top of the table. But Saint-Étienne's only played 31, where Marseille, Bordeaux, and Lyon have played 32 each. So still have to kind of include them in the mix. At the bottom of the table, a very, very, very tight race going on. Bastia on 28 points, Dijon on 29, Lorient on 31, Nancy on 31, Caen on 32, Metz on 35, and I think you have to even include Montpellier at 36 and Lille at 37 points, and that's moving all the way up to 13th place. So there is a slew of teams, seven teams, trying to stay out of three spots in the Ligue 1 right now. Our top goal scorers currently in the Ligue 1 are, Edison Cavani on 29 goals. Alexandre Lacazette, although missing some time during the season, up to 24 goals now. Radamel Falcao on 17. Badafembi Gomi on 16. And then we have a slew of players. We have Balotelli and Meunier at Montpellier on 13 goals each. Kylian Mbappe in 12 points. Mukanjo at Lorient on 12. And Santini at Caen on 12 goals each as well. Another match of the week is another relegation battle. Montpellier-Lorient. Montpellier is currently, just looking at my standings quickly, Montpellier is on 14th points. Lorient, after the win, they've won three straight, actually, on 31 points, just sitting inside the relegation zone by goal differential alone. Montpellier has lost three of their last four matches, but were victors on the weekend, 2-0 over Caen, another team that's in that mix. Having said all of that, I don't think Lorient can keep up this pace where they've won three straight. I do think that they're in for probably a draw. I'm going to take a 1-1 draw in this one. And I see this battle really materializing. This is going to be a tough battle for all seven teams here that I mentioned moving down to the end of the wire here. So, Rob, I'm going to go back to you now for England.
Absolutely. And the Premier League, our match of the week was Chelsea against Manchester City. I forgot the prediction for this one, but it ended in a 2-1 victory for Antonio Conte's men. A goal from two goals from Eden Hazard gave the Blues the goals, and Sergio Aguero scored the only long goal for Manchester City, giving all 3 points to Antonio Conte's men and edging so closer to a Premier League title. As the table stands, we have Chelsea with 75 points in second, Tottenham Hotspur with 68 points, 7-point gap. In third, Liverpool with 63. And in fourth, Manchester City with 61. In fifth, Manchester United with 57. I guess we'll mention this team since they lost today as well, 3-0 to Crystal Palace. Arsenal in sixth with 54 points. 7 points from a Champions League spot, and I think even more important, 14 points behind rival Spurs. Now, bear in mind, they still have a game in hand. They still have two games in hand, Arsenal, but it's not looking good for Arsene Wenger's men as well to qualify for a European spot, don't you think, Joe?
I agree with you 100%. You know, I kind of want to go back to what you and I were talking about a little bit before we came on the air. When does Wenger finally fall on his sword, I think? I think is the big question right now. You can't imagine he doesn't recognize what's going on right now at Arsenal. Does he think he's too big at this point where he doesn't recognize it, or is he just that blind? I mean, it's not going well. I saw a stat. They'd given up 3 goals in their last 4 road matches. And it's the first time that's happened, I think, since 1929 or 1928. That was a stat NBC Sports had flashed up on the screen at the end of the match. So, you know, on the road, they've been abysmal. They gave up 10 goals to Bayern Munich in the Champions League, getting unceremoniously bounced from the competition. When does Wenger look at every? When does Wenger finally look in the mirror and say, "Hey, it's me. Maybe it's time for me to go." You know, I don't know what's got to happen for him to say that, I guess, right?
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine what Arsenal fan TV looks like right now.
It is. I'm sure you'll find out when you get off the air.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be must-see TV for us, right? I mean, I think they're going to be jumping from the top of the Emirates rafters at this point. Right. So, but you've got to start wondering when he starts looking in the mirror. You know, I feel bad. This is one I'd love to ask Phil Shane, who's a big Arsenal fan, and just to get his thoughts. So, Sorry, I stole the stage there for a second.
Going back to the Premier League, our relegation zone is as follows: Swansea with 28, Middlesbrough with 24, and Sunderland last place with 20 points. Top goal scorers are Romelu Lukaku with 23, Harry Kane with 19, Alexis Sanchez with 18, Diego Costa with 17, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic with 17 as well. And our match of the week next week in the Premier League is going to be Manchester United against Chelsea. Two teams that are separated by 8 points. You know, it's the old club of Jose Mourinho taking on him again. And I think we're in for a good matchup here, Joe. The match is at Old Trafford, so it's going to be more emotional, I think, for Jose Mourinho. So I think... Oh, man, that's a good one. I think it's going to end in a 2-1 victory for Chelsea. I think they just looked unstoppable so far this season, and they proved that against Manchester City over the weekend. And who's to say that they can't do the same against Manchester United?
True.
I think they're going to do it.
You know, United...
I think they're going to finally break that undefeated streak of 21 matches.
Yeah, I think you're right. And United, for me, is... They've really been Zlatan or bust this year, right? I mean, he's. Did you mention? I think you mentioned him in the top goal scorers in the league. I mean, it's really been him or bust. I mean, they've got to be thoroughly disappointed with Paul Pogba. I mean,
definitely.
But it's really been Zlatan keeping them, you know, in that Europa League race at this point. And you know, I think you know many have mentioned their best. Their best route to the Champions League next year is to actually win the Europa, and we'll have to see if they can even do that. So,
right.
You know, we'll have to move on from there. So let's head over to the Serie A, where last week we had the Lazio-Napoli match. I want to say I predicted a draw on this one. I just can't remember. But this one finished 3-0 to Napoli. Goals by Callejon, Insigne. Insigne with the brace. The third goal is really just a garbage goal, 90 in the stoppage time in the second half. But Napoli winners in this one, and with that result,
still keep pace with the top teams in the league. Juventus leading the way, 77 points after 31 matches. Roma 6 points back at 71. Napoli on 67 points, but at this point 10 points back of Juventus. You've got to think that they're pretty much done. Lazio is in fourth place on 60 points. Still, 7 points behind Napoli. I think this was their opportunity this week to possibly sneak their nose into that Champions League race, but it certainly wasn't meant to be. Combining that with at least the bittersweet week where they, in the Coppa Italia, they were able to knock out Roma in this one. Knock out Roma and move on to the final against Juventus. So still having a great season, a nice rebirth from Ciro Immobile as well there. Atalanta still holding strong in the Europa League position, 59 points. Then just outside is AC Milan on 57 and Inter Milan on 55. Inter, every time you look at them and they look like they're going to make a run, they stink it up. Losers of their last two, losing 2-1 to Sampdoria, and then losing on the weekend to Crotone is a really big loss for them. They're not going to do wonders for them. Fiorentina just behind them on 52 points. The bottom of the table looks like this. Pescara on 14, Palermo on 15 points, and Crotone with two wins in a row actually trying to make a move out. They're only on 20 points and only 3 points back from safety. Empoli on 23 points. They've lost four of their last five. Genoa on 29 points, and then Sassuolo up to 32 points. Top goal scorers in the Serie A so far: Andrea Belotti, who we had mentioned at the beginning of the show, 24 goals, tied with Edin Dzeko for the Capo Cannonieri race. Gonzalo Higuain on 21 goals, Mauro Icardi on 20 goals, Dries Mertens on 20 goals, Ciro Immobile on 18 goals, and then we have a slew of players at 14 goals. Borriello, Gomez, Insigne, Kalinic, all with 14 goals as well. Our match of the week coming up, Rob, tough to say whether the United-Chelsea match or this one is the match of the week. But this is the derby.
It's one of the early ones, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe this match is this early. The Derby della Madonnina. Inter Milan, AC Milan at the San Siro. Who would have guessed that? 6:30 a.m. on, it's Saturday. Saturday, 6:30 a.m. Yeah, most of them are Saturday because of Easter. Again, these two teams separated by 2 points. They're a couple of points.
Sorry, Joe. Not most. All.
Yeah. No, because we have the
league. No, I'm talking about in Serie A.
Oh, yeah. All the matches on Saturday in Serie A are on Saturday because of Easter. I think the only Sunday match is the United Chelsea match. Most of the matches are going to be on Saturday. So looking ahead at this one, Ignacio Abate is going to be out, Bertolacci's out, and Jack Bonaventura all out with injuries. Gagliardini is probable for this match with an ankle injury right now. This is the Jekyll Hyde match of the season, isn't it? I mean, Inter, you would think that they would run over Milan, but on the form that they're on, certainly don't indicate that. You go back and you look at where they stand right now and their recent run of form. Inter's won just two of their last five, where Milan's won three of their last five, and they won their last matchup on the weekend 4-0 over Palermo. This match, you don't really have a home Inter is the home team, but you don't have a home designation. I'm going to take a 2-2 draw in this one. I think this one is going to be a pretty exciting match as Milan derbies go. But I don't see a clear winner in this one. And it's going to be, you're going to need to do some exciting stuff with the ball to keep us up at 6:30 in the morning. So I'm predicting 2-2. Rob, I'm going to send it back over to you, the Bundesliga.
Sorry. In the Bundesliga, our match of the week was Bayern Munich against Dortmund, the Classic. I predicted a 1-1 draw in this one. I predicted a draw. I don't remember the score, but I predicted a draw. And needless to say, I was completely wrong. 4-1 to Bayern Munich. Two goals from Robert Lewandowski, a goal from Frank Ribery, and a goal from Arjen Robben. Christian Pulisic played all 90 minutes, which could only mean a good thing, I guess. But needless to say, Rafael Guerreiro scored the lone goal for Borussia Dortmund. But needless to say, Carlo Ancelotti's men get up good preparation and a good test before their clash against Real Madrid this week in the Champions League. Looking at the table here, it's Bayern Munich still on top with 68 points. Running up to second place is Leipzig with 58 points. In third, Hoffenheim with 51. In fourth, Dortmund with 50. In fifth, Hertha Berlin with 43. In sixth, Freiburg with 41. Running off the relegation playoff spot, we have Augsburg with 29. Ingolstadt with 28. And Darmstadt with 15 as well. And our match of the week this week is going to be For some reason, it's not loading. Here we go. Yep, Leipzig against Freiburg Saturday at 9:30 p.m. 9:30 a.m. Sorry. Two teams separated by 17 points, all in a European spot. I'm going to say, with the good form that Leipzig's been, you know, they're trying their best to go into a Champions League position without any controversy happening, and I think that this will be a prime example of it. I think they're going to get a victory here. 3-1, Leipzig.
I was going to say 3-1 sounds about right to me, too. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as Leipzig still continues to their form, you know, maintaining that position in the Bundesliga, running towards those the Champions League position. It's going to be interesting to see how UEFA handles that with our Red Bull Salzburg, to see if they make one or both teams not compete in the competition because of their ownership. So, so let's head over to MLS, Rob, quickly. Where our match of the week last week was the Orlando City New York Red Bull matchup. This one finished in a 1-0 victory for Orlando City at home, with Carrasco scoring the goal in the 34th minute. So looking at the tables in MLS, we're going to go to the Eastern Conference first, as this was an Eastern Conference matchup. We have Columbus Crew leading the way, currently on 10 points. Orlando City in second after that victory on the weekend on 9 points. Atlanta United, the surprising Atlanta United, which played a – God, Rob, you know, I saw most of it. It was probably the match of the weekend between them and TFC, an exciting 2-2 draw between them. So they're on 8 points. You know, I'm starting to think your Miguel Almiron MVP prediction might not be so far off, man.
Did provide a good assist on the goal for who was it?
Villalba, I think it was.
Villalba, yeah, Hector Villalba.
Yeah, he, right? That first goal that he scored. Yeah, he played a nice ball down the line there, and he, you know, Almiron played that nice ball down the line, and he just stepped right into it and scored with it. Great, great play. Chicago Fire on 8 points as well. New England Revolution, New York City FC, New York Red Bull, DC United, and Toronto FC all on 7 points. Then we go down to the Montreal Impact on 3 points and the Philadelphia Union on 2 points. Before I give you the Western Conference, Rob, Montreal Impact and Philadelphia Union, most disappointing teams in MLS so far this season?
It's hard to disagree, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's been not a good start for both these teams, especially after they impressed so far last season.
Agreed. That's what I mean. It's kind of disappointing, especially for me. I think Montreal is a little bit more disappointing than Philly, just because of the talent that they have there with Piatti and Oduro and a couple other guys there. You know, they're a talented side, and I'm surprised that they're underperforming so far this season. Let's take it to the Western Conference quickly. Portland Timbers leading all of MLS on 13 points. FC Dallas on 10 points. Houston Dynamo, they are third best at scoring in the league, 11 goals on the season. They're on 9 points. Sporting KC on 9 points as well. Then we have the San Jose Earthquakes in 5th on 7. LA Galaxy on 6 points. And then the Seattle Sounders on 6 points. Then Real Salt Lake at 5. And then the bottom of the table is Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, and Minnesota United, all on 4 points each. The reason I asked you that question, Rob, is because it was asked on SiriusXM, Brian Dunseth. Some people had mentioned that Minnesota was the more disappointing because they were just non-competitive their first 5 or 6 games, or their first few games of the season. So it looks like they've gotten a little bit better at it. Let's go to the goal scorers in MLS. Kubo Torres on 6 goals. Fernando Adi on 5 goals. Martinez at Atlanta United, who is currently out on injury, with 5 goals as well. And Diego Valeri on 5 goals. Ramirez at Minnesota on 4 goals. We have a ton of players at on 3 goals each. There's about 13 or 14 players because obviously it's still early in the season. So our match of the week is a big rivalry matchup as far as MLS goes. New York Red Bull, DC United. This is at Red Bull Arena. This match is on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Mike Grella is going to be out of this one. Connor Lade is questionable. Mullins for DC United is also ruled out of this one as well. It was good to see that DC United got back to winning ways, because they really started out pretty poorly, but they've won their last 2 matches. Obviously, NYCFC and the Philadelphia Union, both matches at home. They're both 2-1 victories for them. But now going back out on the road against a New York Red Bull side that definitely needs points here. I'm going to take the Red Bull in this one 2-0. I don't think they're going to leave anything up to chance here at home moving forward. So Red Bull 2, New York 0. So
Rob, Champions League, we've got to come up with some predictions here as well, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Let's start with the
first. Let's not be biased as well.
Yeah, we're going to try not to. I'm going to do my best, but no promises. First one I'm going to give you is the Borussia Dortmund-Monaco matchup. That is Tuesday at 2:45. We went into this in depth with Jonathan. Dortmund coming in under a ton of injuries. Monaco coming in rather healthy, but how many goals can you get in this one? I'll go first, Rob, on this one.
Sure.
And I'm going to take Dortmund in this one. Just because the kids up, even though they've got a ton of injuries, Pulisic, Dembele, Aubameyang, they're all still there. Berkey is back in goal, and I think it's a little bit better than Subasic in goal for Monaco. The defense is going to be suspect on both sides. Monaco does get Camille Glick back after suspension in the City matchup, but I didn't know Bakayoko was going to be missing in this one. And I think that the midfield for Monaco is tremendously young. And I also think Dortmund, just by the way they played on the weekend, I think they're really looking at this match more so than they were at their Clásico. So I'm going to take Dortmund in this one 3-2. I do think we're going to see some road goals in this one on both sides, both this week and next week. But I think we're going to see 5 goals in this one tomorrow. Rob, what about you?
I think I'm going to say the same thing. 3-2 Dortmund.
3-2 Dortmund, yeah. It's I can't wait. There's going to be a million goals scored in this matchup, so I can't wait. The other matchup tomorrow is the one that pits you against me, Rob. It is Juventus-Barcelona tomorrow, 2:45 p.m. This is at the Jay Stadium. I know Sergi Busquets is going to be out of this one due to suspension, yellow cards. They're also going to be missing Rafinha in this one. Arda Turan picked up a knock. Juventus comes in reasonably healthy. Mandzukic picked up an injury, but I think is going to be playing. The only other injuries to speak of on Juventus' side is Marco Piazza, who had a tore his ACL, and Moise Keane, who has an ankle injury. I don't think Moise Keane sees time in this matchup no matter what. Piazza might have, but at the very end as a fill-in player. So Juventus, you'd have to say, is very, very healthy, where Busquets and Rafinha certainly would have seen meaningful minutes in this match for Barca. So having said that, Juventus has been incredibly dominant at home. I think defensively they're the best team left in the Champions League. I think you've agreed with that as well. I'm going to take Juve in this one, but I'm going to take it 2-1. I think Barca does get a road goal. I don't think you can. I think it's next to impossible to keep Barca off the scoring table. And again, I probably have a little bit of my heart in that analysis or in that final score, but I do think Juve can take this Barca side, which has been a little Jekyll and Hyde all season. So how about you, Rob?
I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. So, yeah, that's, it's going to be one of those really tight matches. It's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure. So let's move on to the Wednesday matchups. Atletico-Leicester City, Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. This is at the Vicente Calderon. I'm going to let you go first because I went first on all the Tuesday matches. So what do you got to say about Atletico-Leicester?
I'm going to say 2-1 Atletico.
2-1 Atletico. Yeah, I think I'm going to actually take it to 2-0. I don't think – I actually think in the end, I don't think Leicester scores a goal against Atletico. Looking back at the teams – as they are, again, we've got quite a few injuries, but really in the midfield and striker, right? I mean, Gamero, Gaitán, those are the big ones, the big names that jump out at me. That's midfield and striker. So, guys like Jimenez, guys like Godín, I would worry if those guys were out, and they're not. So I would definitely say that I feel like Leicester might not score a goal. I also think that losing Wes Morgan on Leicester City side is definitely huge. So that's going to be a big deal. So the last one, big one, Bayern Munich-Real Madrid, Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. This one is at the Allianz Arena. We had mentioned earlier Mats Hummels, Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer with injuries. Pepe out of this one, definitely. Varane is questionable for Real Madrid. Two coaches that know these teams very, very well inside and out with Ancelotti previously at Real Madrid, now at Bayern Munich, and Zinedine Zidane, who coached under Ancelotti when he was at Real Madrid, now the head coach and defending champion in the Champions League. So, I mean, there's a lot going for both of these gentlemen. So, Rob, you first. Anything you want to say before you give me a number?
I think it's going to be a really tough game. I think Real Madrid are at a little bit of an advantage, just considering the losses Bayern Munich have with Thomas Müller, Mats Hummels, and Manuel Neuer. But having said that, I think it's going to be even all out between both these teams, and I'm going to say 2-2.
2-2. I think it's going to be something similar to that. I actually think a 1-1 draw in this one is probably what we're going to see. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a 2-1 victory for Bayern in this one. I think they are an incredibly strong side. They're good defensively. Missing Neuer, I think, is going to be huge for them. But I think it's something that they can certainly overcome, and we'll have to see how it turns out from there. So, Rob, I don't have the one matchups. The one thing I was looking for, and I can't seem to load up. If you wouldn't mind loading it up real quick, because you have better internet than I do today. The Europa League matchups. I know we've got a couple of big teams left in there in Manchester United and Lyon. But just to give the folks, we're not going to put predictions on it, but just to give everybody the matchups to look forward to on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we have Lyon, Besiktas, we have Celtic, Genk, Ajax, Schalke, and Anderlecht, Manchester United.
So there we go. And those games are usually at about 3:00. Any deviation from that at all?
Nope,
3:00 for all of them. So
3:05 to be exact.
3:05. So yep, keep your eyes open for those particular matches.
And they're all on Thursday.
That's correct, on Thursday. Want to send our best out to Giuseppe Rossi, who suffered a knee injury, his fourth knee injury of his career. Rob, if I remember correctly, 3 knee injuries, including an ACL tear to the right knee. Now we have an ACL tear to the left knee, so he's going to be out for some considerable time. And I feel like he's, not that he's Ronaldo, but kind of on the path, you know, in terms of the injuries holding him back and really not allowing us to see the great player that he is, because he's been, when he's on the pitch, he's fantastic. So it's unfortunate to see him go down with injury again, but we definitely do wish him the best of luck. So wanted to mention that as well. So, Rob, I know we've got the trivia answer coming up. Anything else that we're missing before I give you the trivia again?
No, I think we can mention that we have I completely lost track here. We have a CONCACAF Champions League final.
That's right. I forgot about that. Do you have that information up? Because I know I'm not going to be able to pull it up.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be having Pachuca play against Tigres.
Yeah, it's an all-Mexican final. Dallas, obviously, I think Dallas blew the best opportunity, against Pachuca, where they actually had them, if I remember correctly, because I watched the game, we're in position to at least move to extra time, and Pachuca scored a goal. It was Irving Lozano scoring in extra time, which put Pachuca through over FC Dallas. And then the other matchup, which was Vancouver Tigres, I think went 2-0, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't much competition there. Who do you got there, Rob? Tigres, Pachuca.
It's hard to tell yet, but I would say Pachuca, just because of the performances that comeback against FC Dallas, as you said, was phenomenal. And having a player like Irving Lozano is certainly an advantage for any team. But, you know, this is Tigres with the player like Andrei Jinyak as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard. Let's talk about this next week when the match happens.
You know how I feel about Andrei Pierre Jinyak. So, I think that's the way I'm going to lean. So, let's give you the trivia question again.
Absolutely.
Okay, so N'Golo Kante of Chelsea is on the verge of becoming the fifth player ever to win back-to-back titles in the domestic league with 2 different teams. Can you name the other 4 players? And again, like I had said, one happened in the English in England. The other, there were 2 that happened in Italy and 1 that happened in Spain. So, can you give me 4 names?
Yeah, absolutely. The first one that I thought of was Samuel Eto'o.
Samuel Eto'o is not on the list. He's not. No. No, you'd have to tell me where he went. It's the same domestic
Barcelona league. And Inter.
That's the same domestic league.
Oh, it's the same one.
Yes, sorry about that.
No, didn't he win with Chelsea? No. What am I saying? No, sorry. Okay, that's not one. Another one I was thinking was Mark Schwarzer.
the goalkeeper for Chelsea and Leicester?
He was not on this list.
But I'm pretty sure he's won it.
I'm not sure. This article was written January 24, 2016, so you might be right. How about that? I'm gonna give you. You might be right. I don't know if.
It's not. You might be right. I am right.
All
right. I'll even check it right now.
Yeah, good. Double check that because I don't have that name on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2015. Chelsea. 2016. Leicester City.
Okay, so we'll have to amend this list. So so Schwarzer's won. All right, you got four more.
Yeah, there you go. David Villa?
No, David Villa is not on the list.
I thought he won something with Atletico and with Barcelona.
I'd have to look him up, but this is before 2016. There is a Barcelona.
Yeah, he did. There you go. La Liga, 2012-2013, Barcelona, 2013-2014. That's Villa.
Wow, then I've really got an issue with Sky Sports here. Because Sky Sports article written January 24th, 2016, has... Do you want the name?
Other than that, I give up, yeah.
Okay.
Other than
that, the names that I have, Eric Cantona.
Okay, yeah, Leeds, I know. Manchester United,
correct. Andrea Pirlo.
Juventus Milan.
Correct. AC Milan 2010-2011 and Juventus 2011-2012. Okay. Michael Laudrup. Barcelona 93-94 and Real Madrid 94-95.
And David Villa 2012-2013, 2013-2014.
And I don't have the David Villa name on this list. The last one I have is El Divino Codina. Regarded one of the greatest players ever. Went from Juventus 94-95 to AC Milan 95-96.
Huh.
Roberto Baggio. So so that's, yeah, so I got a problem with Sky Sports. If we've got David Villa and Mark Schwartzel to add to that list, then Sky Sports has a problem because that's where this information came from. And it was based on something that was mentioned on the Chelsea broadcast on the weekend. So
Wait, I think there's one more.
All right, who do you got?
I think there's one more that I just remembered. No, sorry. I was going to say Marcel Desailly, but he didn't win anything.
No, I don't think he did. So, all right, so next week, since I suck at trivia, you're next on it. So... let me close this out. So I think without anything else on the docket, Rob, I think we're good, right?
Yeah.
Let's hit the closing music.
That sounds good.
All right. So I do want to mention as a programming note, because of my internet issues here for the next few days on vacation, this podcast probably won't get loaded up to the internet until maybe Thursday, but I hope to have it up as soon as possible. So for episode 158 of Low Limit Football, I want to thank again Jonathan Johnson from BN Sports for joining us tonight and helping us break down the Champions League. Forza Juventus tomorrow. And on behalf of everyone, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.